Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I welcome all of you from all over the world. And from our sister stations, WBAI in New York, WPFW in Washington, and KPFK in Los Angeles. This is a program about empowerment. Each day, thousands upon thousands of brand new listeners come here. We get a profile on who's coming in. We have a chance to read their emails and letters. And we try to give back information that they say would help them make better choices. So we start our show with the latest on health and healing. Then it's cutting edge. All the information that I share will always have scientific citations in the peer-reviewed literature. Why? I've had many people say, Gary, why do you, in the middle of talking about something, why do you say, well, from this study was published in this journal or done at this institution? The reason is simple, because for the most part, the vast majority of people working in the field of health are completely unaware of all the good research and independent scientific discoveries that are out there that are published in peer-reviewed literature. So we just want to show that these are not just random thoughts. This is not some homespun story from West Virginia. This is the state-of-the-art science. Then we give you the latest on environmental issues. Today, for example, I'm going to share the whole idea of what happens with ceramide. C-E-R-A-M-I-D-E. Now, these are molecules that are in our body, and they're very important for helping you keep healthy skin. But as we age, we produce less of these, and which is one of the reasons that our skin, at about age 30, depending upon how much sun exposure we've had and how long we've been, neglectful for feeding our skin. Most people never think about feeding the skin. And so by the age of 30, you pay a price. By 40, you're looking at major forms of skin repair, like different types of dermabrasion or laser therapy. I'm going to share an article today from Emily Perdue on how to nourish your skin. Plus, I'll give you the protocols I've used with a lot of people to help them get their skin back to normal. Also, the number one cause of disease, of all major diseases, is inflammation. One of the things I learned a long time ago was it's much better to take something that's very complicated and very scientific and very abstract to most people's thinking and just break it into simple lay language with examples that people can just understand. So if I said, well, there's a tumor necrosis factor molecule and it's going to react in your body, that means nothing. However, if I suggest that eating a pizza and the crust of that pizza is burnt and the body can't digest it, and every human being on the planet, no exceptions, every single time you eat an acrylamide, you'll have inflammation, no exceptions. The difference is, how many things do you eat? How often, to what degree, and then you can pretty much project what the amount of damage is going to be. What you don't know is will it be a heart attack or a stroke, diabetes or obesity, inflammation and pain in your muscles, fibromyalgia, or in your joints, arthritis, or inflammation in your brain, memory loss, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. So on the one hand, we spend hundreds of billions of dollars a year, which I don't believe we should be spending a nickel, because I feel it's all fraudulent. I'll get to that later. By institutions that have managed to figure out how to con people. They con the legislators. They'll use their pedigree to talk in arcane language that the average legislator is not aware of. And nobody ever wants to think, but you as I didn't fund the latest research on AIDS or cancer or heart disease. And woe to me if they end up having a discovery and I'm the one who blocked it. So everything, single thing everybody wants in science and medicine, they get. I mean, they just get it. It's just like opening a door saying, I'm here to do research. I'm from Harvard, Stanford, and whatever you want, you get. But no one ever says, and exactly what were the results? We're terrified in our society to ask, what's the results of the war on terror? More terrorism. The war on drugs, quite simply, one of the most profitable growth industries is for private prisons, putting people who smoke marijuana away for 20 years. How stupid is that? What about the war on obesity? We're fatter than we've ever been. How about the war on poverty? Not since the days of the Great Depression have we been seeing more Americans suffer from poverty. In fact, because we have more Americans today, we have more poverty today, more people living in poverty today than we did at the height of the Great Depression. Or in our entire history as a nation, ever. So, gee whiz, do we even have the courage to say, shouldn't we rethink our war on poverty and drugs and cancer and heart disease and AIDS? And the answer is, sure, we should. That's what this program does. Anywhere else, the answer is no, because they've got something invested. They got a dog in the fight. They're just not going to let you know. We're going to explore that today. I'm going to tell you what doctors don't know about inflammation, but you will. You'll know more about inflammation today than most of the doctors in the United States. That's how simple it is. I'll break it down, and I'll share the latest from Logan Bromwell. Also, what about enzymes? Enzymes are catalysts of life. We need enzymes. That's why I suggest people to have a papaya shake, because papaya and pineapple, the two together, especially the pithy middle part of a pineapple, has bromelain, which is just rich in anti-inflammatory enzymes, which means in lay language that when you have papaya and you have pineapple and you mix it up into a blender and you drink that down, you're turning off inflammation all over the body. It's easy enough to understand. Jeffrey Stout, the latest on that. From our environmental segment today, Poisoning the Well. From Abram Lustgarten, How the Feds Let Industry Pollute the Nation's Underground Water Supply. Now, you haven't heard this before, but everyone listening is affected, and especially those who don't know that you might have had a 200 or 300 million year old aquifer deep under the ground that's supplying your local water. Now the federal government, because it's completely corrupt at every level, especially the EPA, is allowing the special interest groups, you know, the people who are the big checkbooks, to give influential people the right amount of money or inducements for later employment. The bribe is different in each case, but the end result is that they're going to allow them to drill where the drilling is almost certain to cause pollutants to go into your pristine water. Now, here's the key. Once an aquifer is polluted, it cannot be decontaminated. So whose interest do these people have? And finally, if time permits, Glenn Greenwald, HSBC, Too Big to Jail and the U.S.'s Two-Tier Justice System. It's a short commentary. Today we have a program, and it is called Talk Back, which means there'll be no guest, there'll be no in-depth investigative report, which I normally do, because you have the entire program, starting now, to call in from anywhere in North America and Canada and ask your questions or share your thoughts or open up a dialogue on an issue. We support and sponsor and originate more original social issues, projects than any place else in the United States. We help those who are working at the grassroots level. We create original investigations and documentaries. We have thousands of articles there and calls to action. It's all free. Go to our website and you'll see all this information. And it's done every day, 7 days a week. That's why we have so many progressive-minded people coming to us. Our call-in number, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Let's begin. Now, we all want to have healthier skin. But anything you do that constricts the capillaries or the blood flow that nurtures the skin and the different layers of skin and tissue and the collagen, then it is not, will your skin wrinkle or become a problem for you or jowie or drop or droop? It's just at what time. And once it starts, generally cosmetic surgery is the only thing most people could do to reverse it. But you can do a lot of things as well. For example, the more vitamin C you consume, the healthier your skin is going to be. Now, if you take vitamin C, let's say 1,000 milligrams of buffered vitamin C, 6 times a day, and 1,000 milligrams of quercetin, that's with a Q, quercetin, which is an important bioflavonoid that works synergistically with vitamin C, the two together help create new collagen. Therefore, you're creating new collagen, and the new collagen has no defects in its DNA. Therefore, it's going to be tighter. It'll be fuller. Otherwise, you know how you can tell people are aging? Look on the sides of their head. See where I'm putting my finger right now if you're watching this, and you can watch this by going to progressiveradionetwork.com or GaryNall.com. Right in this area, little tiny blue veins start to show as people's skin thins. The veins have always been there, just like the veins in the back of your hand have always been there. But frequently you don't see them because you have more fatty tissue, and it's hydrated. And the older you get, the more dehydrated you become. Hence, the more clean, healthy water that you drink throughout a day, the more hydrated your skin is, the more vitamin C and quercetin, the more new collagen, younger, healthier skin. You literally can grow out wrinkles. And what was jowy and hanging can get tight again. And then we have, when our bodies are young and they're manufacturing a molecule to keep the skin healthy, it's called ceramide, C-E-R-A-M-I-D-E. Now, these ceramides are a major component of our skin's surface. In effect, they protect against moisture loss to keep skin youthful and supple. And functionally, ceramides support the skin's matrix. Now, the matrix is what, well, let's say it's what holds your whole face together. Now, when you're young, it's tight. By the age of 25, the skin already is starting to lose its matrix tightness, and it begins to shift. And then you start seeing a kind of a pulling where you get a little bit of more weight in the bottom part of your face. That's what happens. It declines, and then we get the sags and the wrinkles. Now, scientists have found a way to extract ceramides from whole grain wheat that allows aging humans to nourish their skin structure from within. Research has shown that ceramides derived from wheat inhibit the elastase enzymes that destroy the skin's elastin, which results in loss of flexibility and an increased wrinkling. So natural ceramides provide continuous maintenance for skin and allow it to sustain its healthy protective function and vital moisture. Now, according to Emily Perdue in an article, the laboratory data on restoring the structure to human skin is very impressive. Good clinical data. It allows ceramides to produce smoother, more youthful skin, free of itching and flaking that is also common. Do you ever notice how many times a person who is over the age of 30 has red blotches and aging spots and then flakiness? And you can't always see it when they have hair, but an awful lot of people, the older they get, they have little tiny keratinized lesions on their head. The trouble is these itch. So let's say that they scratch them and they come off, and then you get a little inflammation there. And that inflammation then can cause an infection. Well, ceramides preserve your youthful skin, and aging causes a loss of ceramides, as I mentioned. And the result is thinning of the skin's outer layer that weakens the skin's moisture retention properties. Now, the obvious solution is to replace those ceramides. What's the best way of doing it? Well, research shows that improvement to skin's moisture barrier function when lipids, including ceramides, are applied directly to the skin. But this topical approach can't match what happens when you take them internally. On the other hand, very promising studies show that ceramides, taken as a food supplement, can significantly improve skin moisture levels and reduce discomfort of dry aging skin. Now, until about 1997, ceramides for internal use were derived only from animal sources, chiefly cows. Now, for those of us like myself who are vegans, we're not about to take anything like that. That's why it's always important for you to look at the capsule and ask yourself, does this come from, more often than not, it's a sea vegetable that makes your vegan gel capsules. Or does it come from gelatin, which can come from, let's say, the stomach or the hide of a cow? Now researchers have discovered a number of plant-based ceramides that are available from grains like rice. And a little over a decade ago, a French company derived a wheat-derived ceramide used as skin moisture that was taken orally. And there are clinical studies out there, and they're good. So I'm suggesting you pay attention to this because it can help you, especially with something as important as our skin. I have a major documentary that'll be out in about 3 weeks. I'll be premiering it on a PBS station in a major city at that time. I even have two books coming out on the same day, and all about inflammation. Because when we think of food, we love to think that food is something that nourishes it. It can, if we select the right amount, in the right quantities, eaten in the right combination, and that it's prepared without excessive heat. And there are millions of Americans making an active effort each day to find organic food that's not GMO grown. They're looking at eating smaller portions of most food. And if they are going to eat larger portions, eat that type of food that is low in calories, like salads. You can have all the salads you want. Now, the trouble is, and here's the problem, there is no national campaign by our government, or the Surgeon General, or the White House, or any other major agency to show people what is right or what is wrong with our diet. And I understand there can't be. The President of the United States could never be honest, completely honest, because about our food. Because if he'd fire all the people we hired from Monsanto, and he'd tell you not to eat genetically engineered, and he'd stop the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is the worst trade agreement in American history, a treaty that would usurp our own laws and allow and force us to eat the garbage produced by major corporations around the world. Also, he'd have to say, stop going to all the fast food restaurants, stop the pizzas, the hot dogs, the hamburgers, the french fries, the colas, the coffee. And that would decimate hundreds of billions of dollar industry each year. So it's not going to happen. So a lot of people grow up thinking that the foods and beverages they see as being told to eat on television are right for us. On the other hand, we have the most corrupt, I can't say the most corrupt because they're all corrupt, just degrees of corrupt. I don't trust any governmental agency. They're all corrupt in my opinion, but the really bad ones we know are the FBI and the CIA and Homeland Security and the Federal Trade, the Federal Reserve and the Federal Trade Commission and the FDA and the USDA. They all are political, which means instead of doing the job they were mandated to do, they become swollen, massive, ever-increasing bureaucracies that we are afraid to challenge. If you challenge the IRS, you're going to get audited. If you challenge any of them, you're going to be in their sights. So we're at a point where we're afraid to even ask the most basic questions, like Surgeon General, U.S. Public Health Service, we have an epidemic of adult diabetes in children. They're consuming high fructose corn syrup beverages. They're consuming refined carbohydrates. They're bouncing off the walls in schools and being given the false diagnosis of ADD and ADHD because they're so sugar and caffeine addled each day that they're hyper. Surely you should educate the public and parents in particular about how their kids may not outlive them. We now have high blood pressure in young kids and heart disease and arthritis in teenagers. And they'll say, well, we'll look into it and we'll have a study, which means that's political speak for don't inhale and expect us to give you an answer before you exhale. Because in your lifetimes, you'll never have anyone being honest about anything in any federal agency. It's just not going to happen. We all know that. Those of us who are independent know it. The corporate and Republican Democrats, and they're going to go along with anything that supports their position. We are going for something else. So then how in the world is your doctor going to tell you how to overcome inflammation? They're not. They can't. Because the doctor that speaks out and is completely honest about what causes inflammation will be the doctor that is reminded, then warned, then threatened, and then punished. That's the way it works. And if you doubt me, let me introduce you to Carl Humiston, Janice Keller Phelps, and Warren Levin. I could name at least 100 physicians, all with good backgrounds from Harvard and Yale. They told the truth about how to get healthy, and they were punished for it. So then I'm going to tell you what your doctor won't tell you right now. 90% of all disease could be prevented or radically changed if we simply gave up everything in the American diet, because it's all bad. It's disease-producing, and everybody with a brain knows it. And I'm not letting people off the hook who are smart enough to know what they should be eating and choose not to because it's a comfort food or it's conditional or it's emotional. Inflammation is the underlying culprit behind virtually all age-related diseases. And that's according to Logan Bronwell. Let me quote this. Nutrients like curcumin, fish oil, and vitamin D have become so popular because we know they turn off inflammation. Absolutely right, Logan. But it doesn't do any good to eat a bad food and then take a good nutrient. And we know that we should be doing right. But taking a bad food and then taking curcumin, you're going to end up bad. It's just a little longer to get there. Less understood is that as maturing people suffer chronic inflammation, they simultaneously encounter impairment of beneficial immune responses necessary to kill foreign invaders' malignant cells, i.e., the more stress you're under, either nutritional stress, psychic stress, physical stress, or all the above, the more likely you are to come down with colds, flu, and other infections. Aging by itself destroys the delicate balance between destructive and protective inflammatory responses. Fortunately, scientists have discovered a method to turn back this lethal process. Now, here's the good news of what we can all do to make a difference. First, understand that chronic inflammation is something you won't see. You won't even necessarily feel it. You could have inflammatory hormones in your body or markers like homocysteine and C-reactive protein and fibrinogen, and you can't feel it. Only a blood chemistry would tell you that. So chronic inflammation damages cells throughout our body, including the delicate linings of our arteries and our precious brain cells. About 25% of all cancers associated with chronic inflammation that causes mutations that lead to malignant changes. Now, with aging, there is an imbalance that results in the low-level systemic inflammation slowly destroying tissues, and while our ability to mount a strong immune response to pathologic killers is diminished. This imbalance underlies virtually all diseases of aging and early death. And scientists have found that oil from the seed of the black cumin plant, I mentioned this about 3 weeks ago, the nigella, N-I-G-E-L-L-A, sativa, S-A-T-I-V-A, can reverse this age-related process. Again, your doctor doesn't know any of this, wouldn't know it, doesn't want to know it, and if you produce evidence, will be angry at you because they're sure that nothing that you, the individual, could do outside of the sacred, esteemed, virtually religious sanctum of medical knowledge could work. How can you do anything when the doctor can't help you? When I tell you your doctor doesn't know a thing about black cumin, they don't. And if you doubt me, ask him. You got a rheumatologist? Ask him. But we do know. Discoveries reveal that black cumin seed oil contains potent but non-toxic compounds that suppress excessive inflammatory molecules. And while at the same time, stimulating the normal acute inflammation we need to fight infection and kill cancers. That's correct. So how do our bodies distinguish between good inflammation, which you need to let you know you've got something wrong? If you doubt me there, ask a diabetic what happens if they get an infection in a foot because they stepped on something and didn't feel it, because they have no nerve sensation. Now that inflammation spreads, now they have gangrene, and they lose a toe and foot. Do you have any idea how many amputations occur in diabetics? So if there is a way that we can help rebalance this and turn off this dangerous inflammation, all the better. And when optimally balanced, our bodies chemically and also at a cellular level fine-tune the inflammatory response, providing enough immediate action to stop an invader, and then at the correct moment to shut it down when the threat is gone and turn off inflammation. So the redness, the swelling, all goes away. But after the age of 40, none of that works the way it's supposed to, because we're not 40, we're closer to 80 biologically because of how we've treated our body. And therefore, age unbalances this system and our bodies gradually shift to a chronically inflamed state called inflammation. At the same time, we increasingly develop what is called immunosenescence. Now, I discussed immunosenescence. Immune system, senescence, end of. So the end of our capacity to maintain an immune system on our own, because we're not feeding the immune system. How many people think about, what good is this going to do for my immune system? Am I eating this food for my immune system, for my heart, my eyes, my liver, my lungs? Because that's really how functional foods work, and that's why when you go after some powdered acai, or you have a grapefruit juice with some lemon in it, or you have a green apple juice with cucumber, you're actually taking something into your body to enhance circulation, to thin your blood. If you're taking cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, cauliflower, sprouts, kale, you're taking it to help prevent cancer. Well, if you take black cumin seed oil, it's going to help turn off inflammation, help to recreate a more delicate balancing effect, and it can even help with arthritis. And it boosts our immunomodulation. It joins just a handful of nutraceuticals now known to modulate the immune system in a good way. And so it stimulates the action of what we call the patrolling immune system cells for the lookout of invading organisms and abnormal cancer cells. The oil triggers an increase in the activity of macrophages. Those are cells that engulf and destroy abnormal cells and helper T cells, cells that marshal natural killer cells and direct them to their targets. So all that is good. And it also helps reduce allergies and asthma, and that's good. And it also helps with cardiovascular conditions, especially any chronic inflammation of the heart could lead to heart disease. And if you have an elevated LDL, bad, and black cumin seed oil neutralizes lipid oxidation and reduces the impact of oxidized LDL, which is a major, major trigger for the atherosclerotic plaques that block arteries and block blood flow. You can help literally reduce an ischemic reperfusion. You can help protect from a heart attack or stroke. And it works almost the same way Vox does, except it's good for you. So that's our nutrient of the day. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment with your calls. Let's say hello to Ann from New Jersey. Hi, Ann. Your turn.
Yes. Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I wanted to ask you what you thought of a vitamin C called liposomal.
It is a fat-soluble vitamin C. And it's fine. And anytime you use a ascorbyl palmitate or any fat-soluble vitamin C, it'll stay about 2 to 3 times longer in your bloodstream. And that is good. And you want that. Okay? Thank you, Ann. Angelo from Queens. Hi, Angelo.
Thanks for taking my call, Gary. Thank you for everything. On blood work, if the uric acid is very low, does it mean that the protein consumption is less? It's like 3.2.
No. Your uric acid can go lower than that. It is not the uric acid that is as important as the pH. The pH has to be just balanced perfectly at about a 7. If you're lower than that, you're acidic. If you're higher than that, you could be too alkaline. Now, there are some multi-level companies out there selling water filters that promote a high pH, as if you're highly alkaline, like 8.5, 9.5, that's a good thing. I would challenge that. I would say that's not a good thing, because you don't want to be too alkaline. Then you can end up with what is known as local alkalosis. And if you have too much acid, then you can end up with local acidosis. And that means you're more susceptible to pain in your joints, swelling. And so what you want is you just want to measure your pH. You can do that each day. You can do it yourself. It's inexpensive. It's non-invasive. You can get a pH strip. All right? And then if you find that, well, maybe you're a little too acidic, all right, then have a glass of, you can have a glass of blueberry juice, or have some blueberries or raspberries, and pour some lemon in it. Now, lemon is acidic to taste, but it actually helps in alkalizing in the system. Simple things. Take care. Let's say hello to Flory from Miami. Hi, Flory.
Hi, Gary. Thank you for everything again. My question is, I have the very bad frown lines. You spoke about the skin, and I haven't found any solution other than Botox, which I have used 6 months ago. Of course, I am due for another, and I am concerned with the side effects of what no doctor will disclose to me about these things.
Okay, well, it's simple. What Botox does is a toxoid. It paralyzes the musculature. The skin is not where your wrinkles are and originate. It is on the matrix underneath. And by literally paralyzing the muscle, it smooths out. And as the musculature smooths, because it's been paralyzed, the skin that rests on top of it is smoothed out also. But it's also emotionless. You don't see any reaction because the person can't move the muscles. Hence the normal way that our faces move. You raise your eyebrows up. If you look, I'm raising my eyebrows. You see that eyebrows go up. And people with too much Botox, which are a lot of people in the media, they have no expression. Now, here's the key. Local focal infections are a major way that our body's immune system is put into a very compromised position. That's why helping a person get well, especially if, let's say, from cancer, you don't start on the cancer directly unless you're working specifically as an oncologist, but rather from a nutritional point of view, you want to get rid of the infections in the gut, so you put them on a detox, because upwards of 60% of your immune system is around your gastrointestinal system. You want to make sure they have a holistic dental checkup and get rid of the mercury and any local focal infections like abscesses or infection in the gums. And most people have some form of infections like gingivitis or periodontal infections and any infections in the joints like arthritis. So if someone came and said, Gary, how do I go about dealing with a cancer? I don't look at the cancer. What I look at is I look at everything else in the body that has to be undone, the damage undone, so that the body's full and complete immune system can work in cooperation with a holistic medical protocol to help the person get well. Well, you putting botulism in your body, or are you putting when you're putting the injections in the skin, what you're doing is you're causing paralysis, but you're also drawing an enormous amount of your immune system to eat them. They literally have to go through phagocytosis. Each and every one of those toxoids have to be engulfed through what's called phagocytosis. So then when people say, oh, I got to go get another Botox, what they're saying is my immune system's finally starting to win, but now the body is able to move and I'm able to get the muscle working again, and now you're going crippled again. So the more Botox you use, the more your immune system is taking a hit. And this should have been explained a long time ago by all the dermatologists. They certainly are aware of this, and they don't, because I believe a lot less people would be using any form of Botox if they knew the truth. Let's say hello to John from Brooklyn. Hi, John.
Two questions. The first question is, I recently did an endoscopy, and the doctor said...
John, I can't hear you. Call back in, and let's get a better connection, please. All right? Let's say hello to Brian from Louisville, Kentucky. Hi.
Hello, Dr. Miller. How you doing, sir?
Doing good. How can we help you?
I called a couple of weeks ago when I just got a surgery for a protocol on what to do, and you told me to call back after my doctor releases me.
Right.
So you wouldn't conflict with them. So what would you suggest I do now?
Okay. Have you been given a clean bill of health by your doctor?
Yes, sir.
Good. All right. Then email Luann. I'll answer her, because the protocol I would give you is going to take a little time. It depends upon what the surgery was for, how extensive the surgery was, where in the body. And so that's something that if I gave it something to you and someone else was already in post-surgery, they're going to use the same one. I don't want that to happen. So we'll get you one. Not a problem. And Luann Panessi, who's here in the office and just came into our studio. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary.
Give this person your email address.
Surely. It's whnn@aol.com. whnn@aol.com.
Good. I promised something from our environmental segment. This is from Abram Lutzgarden from ProPublica, and it's entitled Poisoning the Well, How the Federal Government Lets Industry Pollute the Nation's Underground Water Supply. It's a long piece. It's posted on our website. I'm only going to share the first page with you. You'll get the message. Federal officials have given energy and mining companies permission to pollute aquifers in more than 1,500 places in the United States, releasing toxic material into underground reservoirs that help supply more than half of the nation's drinking water. In many cases, the Environmental Protection Agency has granted these so-called aquifer exemptions in western states now stricken by drought and increasingly desperate for water. EPA records show that portions of at least 100 drinking aquifers, water aquifers, have been written off, closed down, because exemptions have allowed them to be used for dumping grounds. Quote, "You are sacrificing these aquifers," says Mark Williams, a hydrologist at the University of Colorado and a member of the National Science Foundation team studying the effects of energy development on the environment. By definition, quote, "You are putting pollution into them. If you're looking 50 to 100 years down the road, it's not good." As part of an investigation into the threat to water supplies from underground injections of waste, ProPublica set out to identify which aquifers have been polluted. We found the EPA has not even kept track of exactly how many exemptions it has issued, where they are, and whom they might affect. What records the agency was able to supply under the Freedom of Information Act show that exemptions are often issued in apparent conflict of the EPA's mandate to protect waters that may be used for drinking. And then it goes on to talk about this and gave a specific example that a giant aquifer out west that is used by a lot of people. Well, one end of the aquifer they gave to a mining industry to use, and now that mining industry is putting pollutants in there. Well, maybe I missed something about the laws of physics, but if you put a toxin into a body of water that's encased, and it's going to spread that all of the water in there. And yet, we're supposed to believe that, well, it can be handled. Yet there are no tests done for the toxins being put into the water. So when it comes out of the tap, no one, taking a shower, drinking from it, using it for cooking, no one's going to know that their water was polluted. This is what happens when the neoliberal concept of opening up our public resources, our water, our aquifers, suddenly is for sale. ALEC, the group of major corporations that has lobbied all your state legislators, and then they write rules at the state level, as they have the worst rules in America in Pennsylvania. I knew New Jersey was corrupt, but we all know that, and New York is the most corrupt state in the history of the United States, even more in Louisiana. California's right in that same pack. I mean, look how many politicians go to jail every year, about, you know, far less than what should be in jail. But they don't care about our water. If they did, they would ban all hydrofracking. They would decommission all nuclear power plants. They would promote ozone treatment of our public water supplies. But they don't. So I'm just giving you a heads up on how bad it is. Oh, and you remember last year when a judge was hearing a case about our food and genetic engineering? This is from Randy Ananda. This is a follow-up to that. Quote, as courts and bureaucrats continue to assert that citizens have no fundamental right to produce and consume the foods of their choice, we find Monsanto lurking nearby. The Wisconsin judge, who recently ruled that we have no right to own a cow or drink its milk, resigned to join one of Monsanto's law firms. Former Judge Patrick Falder now works for Alexei Bronsalin, LLP, which defended Monsanto against a patent infringement case. So Monsanto ends up hiring the judges. This is our system. This is how absolutely despicable it's all become. So that's that. In this segment of our program, I wanted to share a very important article from Mother Jones by two journalists, Kristen Kern's cousins and Gary Tobbs. It's an article entitled, Does Sugar Kill? How the Sugar Industry Hid the Toxic Truth. And it's in their magazine. Now, why is this important and why do I want to share this with you? Because so often those in the field like Beatrice Trum Hunter and other original investigators who found links between sugar consumption and disease were immediately discounted. All the efforts by so many people to get people to cut back on sugar, to eliminate refined sugars, was met with, there's no scientific proof. You have no evidence on your side. I remember even debating repeatedly the top people within the sugar industry, and they would say, well, where are the studies? Where's the consensus? And of course, I've written a lot of articles on the dangers of sugar. I wrote a whole chapter in a book in 1974 called Sweet Suicide. But still, for the average American who doesn't want to give up the sugar, for them to be able to give some confidence, well, the doctors say it's okay in moderation, or the scientific community isn't against it, means that we continue to use it. It is my belief that if sugar were invented for the first time today, it would be outlawed. It would be banned as a poison. It is only recently that I have posted on my website three very important articles. This article, Does Sugar Kill? Then a letter from my in-house attorney, David Slater, to the Sugar Institute and the PBS, its entire board, and Sharon Rockefeller, about how making an honest statement about the dangers of sugar and how much we consume was grounds for saying no more on the air. Well, that's fine. If they don't want you on the air, they just don't have to invite you on the air, but they shouldn't take you off the air because of some absolutely false notion. But behind it all was the Sugar Institute. And then my article I wrote on sugar, which many consider the most definitive article, scientifically referenced completely, showing the dangers of sugar. But there's always been a missing piece. Now you'll have it. How could they have gotten away with this deception for so long? That is what's revealed in the article. Let me share that with you now. I'm quoting verbatim from the article. On a brisk spring Tuesday in 1976, a pair of executives in the Sugar Association stepped up to the podium of a Chicago ballroom to accept the Oscar of the public relations world, the Silver Anvil. It's awarded for excellence in the, quote, forging of public opinion, end quote. Well, the trade group had recently pulled off one of the greatest turnarounds in PR history. For nearly a decade, The sugar industry had been buffeted by crisis after crisis as the media and the public soured on sugar, and scientists began to view it as a likely cause of obesity and diabetes and heart disease. Industry ads claiming that eating sugar helped you lose weight had been called out by the Federal Trade Commission and the Food and Drug Administration and had launched a review of whether sugar was even safe to eat. Consuming sugar was on the decline by 12% in just 2 years, and producers would see where that trend might lead. As John Tatum Jr. and Jack O'Connell Jr., the Sugar Association's President and Director of Public Relations, posed that day with their trophies, their smiles only hinted at the coup they just pulled off. Their winning campaign, crafted with the help of the prestigious public relations firm Carl Boyer and Associates, had been promoted by a poll showing that consumers had come to see sugar as fattening, and that most doctors suspected it might exacerbate, if not cause, heart disease and diabetes. With an initial annual budget of nearly $800,000, that'd be about $3.4 million today, collected from the makers of Dixie Crystals and Domino and CNH, Great Western, and other sugar brands, the association recruited a stable of medical and nutritional professionals to allay the public's fears, brought snack and beverage companies into the fold, and bankrolled scientific papers that contributed to, quote, highly supportive, end quote, FDA ruling, which the Sugar Anvil application boasted made it, quote, unlikely that sugar will be subject to legislative restrictions in the coming years. The story of sugar, as Tatum told it, was one of a harmless product under attack by, quote, opportunists dedicated to exploiting the consumer public. Now, over the subsequent decades, it would be transformed from what the New York Times 1997 had deemed, quote, a villain in disguise, that's sugar, into a nutrient so seemingly innocuous that even the American Heart Association and the American Diabetes Association approved its use as part of a healthy diet. Research on the suspected links between sugar and chronic disease largely ground to a halt in the late 1980s, and scientists came to view such pursuits as a career dead end. So effective were the Sugar Association's efforts, to this day, no consensus exists about sugar's potential dangers. The industry's PR campaign corresponded roughly with a significant rise in America's consumption of caloric sweeteners, including table sugar, which is sucrose, high fructose corn syrup. And this increase was accompanied in turn by a surge in chronic diseases increasingly linked to sugar. Since 1970, obesity rates in the United States have more than doubled, while the incidence of diabetes has more than tripled. Now, precisely how did the sugar industry engineer this turnaround? The answer is found in more than 1,500 pages of internal memos and letters and company board reports we discovered buried in the archives of the now-defunct sugar companies, as well as in the recently released papers of deceased researchers and consultants who played key roles in the industry strategy. They show how Big Sugar used big tobacco-style tactics to ensure that government agencies would dismiss troubling health claims against their products. Compared to the tobacco companies, which knew for a fact that their wares were deadly and spent billions of dollars trying to cover up that reality, the sugar industry had a relatively easy task. With the jury still out on sugar's health effects, producers simply needed to make sure that the uncertainty lingered. But the goal was the same: to safeguard sales by creating a body of evidence that could use to deploy to counter any unfavorable research. This decades-long effort to stack the scientific deck is why, today, the USDA's dietary guidelines only speak of sugar in vague generalities. Quote, reduce the intake of calories from solid fats and added sugars. It's why the FDA insists that sugar is, quote, generally recognized as safe, despite considerable evidence suggesting otherwise. It's why some scientists' urgent calls for regulation of sugar products have been dead on arrival, and it's why, absent any federal leadership, New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg felt compelled to promote a ban on oversized sugary drinks that passed in September. In fact, a growing body of research suggests that sugar and its nearly chemically identical cousin, high fructose corn syrup, may very well cause diseases that kill hundreds of thousands of Americans every year, and that these chronic conditions would be far less prevalent if we significantly dialed back our consumption of added sugars. Robert Lustig, a leading authority on pediatric obesity at the University of California, San Francisco, made this case last February in the prestigious journal Nature. In an article entitled "The Toxic Truth About Sugar," Lustig and two colleagues observed that sucrose and high fructose corn syrup are additive in the same way as cigarettes and alcohol, and that overconsumption of them is driving worldwide epidemics of obesity and type 2 diabetes. Sugar-related diseases are costing us about $150 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars a year, the authors estimate. So federal health officials need to step up and consider regulating this stuff. Well, the sugar associations dusted off what has become its stock response. The Lustig paper, it said, quote, lacks the scientific evidence or consensus to support its claims, and its authors were irresponsible not to point out that the full body of scientific evidence, quote, is inconclusive at best. Now, this inconclusiveness, of course, is precisely what the Sugar Association has worked so assiduously to maintain. Quote, in confronting our critics, Tatum explained to his board of directors back in 1976, quote, we try never to lose sight of the fact that no confirmed scientific evidence links sugar to the death-dealing diseases. This crucial point is the lifeblood of the association, end quote. Well, the Sugar Association's earliest incarnation dates back to 1943, when growers and refiners created the Sugar Research Foundation to counter World War II sugar rationing propaganda. How much sugar do you need? None, declared one government pamphlet. In 1947, producers rechristened their group the Sugar Association and launched a new PR division, Sugar Information Inc., which before long was touting sugar as, quote, a sensible new approach to weight control. In 1968, in the hope of enlisting foreign sugar companies to help defray costs, the Sugar Association spun off its research division as the International Sugar Research Foundation. Quote, misconceptions concerning the cause of tooth decay, diabetes, and heart problems existed on a worldwide basis, it explained. Yeah. In 1967, the Sugar Association's research division began considering, quote, the rising tide of implications of sucrose and atherosclerosis. Before long, according to a confidential 1970 review of industry-funded studies, the newly formed research group was spending 10% of its research budget on the link between diet and heart disease. Well, here's what happened. A particular concern was the work of the University of Pennsylvania researcher on, quote, sucrose sensitivity, which sugar executives feared was, quote, likely to reveal evidence of harmful effects, end quote. In fact, one of the representatives, consultants, recommended that sugar companies get to the truth of the matter by sponsoring a full study. Well, it tried to and then found out that sugar was bad, so they just canceled all the research. What this article goes on in some depth to prove is that all along, for dozens of years, the sugar industry has known that sugar is linked to disease. It knows that there's an association between diabetes, tooth decay, obesity, excess calories, and heart disease and cancer. The evidence is overwhelming in the good quality independent literature, in spite of all that scientific fact, in spite of all the people's knowing that when you eat sugar, you're in trouble. People still continue to consume it in no small measure because they got one of the best PR campaigns in the world working on their behalf. That's why I want you to read this article. That's why it's so important. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you all for listening in. Remember, does sugar kill? How the sugar industry hid the toxic truth. The articles of Mother Jones from last month. Have a nice day.